Now we're going to take a look back in time at an incident of racial controversy within the Boston Police Department. It's the 1995 story of Officer Michael Cox, an African-American plainclothes officer who was brutally beaten by his fellow officers when they mistook him for a murder suspect. The subsequent cover-up inside the department and the civil rights trial that ensued are at issue in a new book titled The Fence, a police cover-up along Boston's racial divide. Its author, Dick Lair, joins us in the studio to talk about the book. He's a Boston University journalism professor and a former Boston Globe investigative reporter. Take us back to that night in January 1995 when Michael Cox was beaten by fellow officers. What happened?
Well, it all began with a shooting on Upper Blue Hill Avenue. And the call that went into the Boston PD incorrectly said that an off-duty cop was down. And that's like yelling fire in a movie theater. Cops were flying in from all the districts. And it led to a high-speed police chase after the four shooting suspects. The longest police chase in memory, involving upwards of 20 cars. It was something right out of Hollywood. Mike Cox, who was working in the gang unit that night in plain clothes, and his partner were in the first car, the lead police car, chasing the fleeing suspects. The chase ended at a dead end in Mattapan, a dead end surrounded by a fence, which is the reason for the title of my book, The Fence. Michael Cox was chasing one of those suspects who went flying over the fence.
Now on foot.
Now on foot, yes. And the suspect climbs the fence. Mike is fast on his heels. He reaches up to try to grab him, and he's hit in the head from behind. And there's a second blow in the head, and there's more blows. And suddenly it's Rodney King time at the foot of this fence on the dead end in Mattapan as Boston police officers think he's a fleeing suspect. They make this mistaken identity. And it's not until well into the beating that someone recognizes that it's Michael. And instead of coming to his aid, and this is where it just keeps getting worse, they disappear into the shadows. And a few minutes later, fellow members of the gang unit find him and call for an ambulance.
The official explanation that came out a little later for Cox's injuries was that he slipped on the ice. Put us into the heads of people at police headquarters at that time. Why even say that when it just absolutely was not true?
Well, I think this is why this case, I think, is so compelling and so illustrative of a police culture where there's almost this, what I'll call this instinct to lie. And this becomes, in my mind, the quintessential case that shows the power of the blue wall of silence, where the last thing you want to do is, you know, admit that you do anything wrong as a cop or point the finger at wrongdoing of another officer.
Paint a picture of the Boston Police Department at that time about race relations inside the department and how race impacted this.
Race is front and center of this. First of all, there's this mistake of identity, profiling, if you will, that Michael is a fleeing suspect. It's a mistake that Michael understood. He's dressed in plain clothes. And it's a mistake made by both black and white officers. Black officers were implicated in the beating and the cover-up. And it just shows how complex, and you might call it a post-affirmative action story, in the sense that 25 years ago, there wouldn't have been a Mike Cox working in plain clothes. And then there wouldn't be, in the aftermath of a horrible mistake like this, the tug, both racially, like by other black officers, oh my God, look what happened to Mike. Should I cooperate and tell the investigators what I know about the beating? Or should I hunker down and fall in line with the blue wall? And in the end, I think, and this was one of the things that make it so astonishing, those officers all fell in line into the blue wall of silence.
In some ways, at least for a period of time after the beating, so did Mike Cox, because at least for a while in the book, it seemed like Mike Cox was willing to say to himself, well, you know, it was just a mistake.
And Michael is a cop. He understood the mistaken identity. He understood even perhaps the first blow was a necessary blow to stop what the officers thought was a fleeing suspect. He did not, however, understand or accept the brutality that followed. And his first instincts were indeed true blue. He expected justice, accountability, and they'd all move on. He was not an Al Sharpton wannabe. He was going to hold a press conference the next day to draw attention to it. No, he thought the system worked, and he was willing to work from within. And that's part of the center storyline here, his story, his sort of loss of innocence about his faith in the system, and then his realization that if there's going to be any justice here, he's going to have to pursue it.
Ultimately, for Michael Cox, it went to civil trial. Tell us how it came out.
He sued a handful of officers. He sued the department, and he sued the city, and it was bring it on. So the book built to the drama of the civil rights trial in federal court in Boston. where he and his lawyers succeeded. A jury found liable three officers in connection with the beating. And then after that verdict, the city stepped up negotiations and a settlement was reached. So, in a sense, Michael achieved a measure of justice.
Did it produce any lasting change as a reporter? Did you find, do you believe there's been any lasting change in the police department that results directly from that suit?
I wish I could, you know, say confidently yes. But at the time, in the late 90s and the early 2000s, when this was a big story, I think there was obviously discussion of these issues and the underbelly of the police culture. But I don't think there was anything lasting.
And bring us up to date with Michael Cox. What's he do today?
He has remained throughout this on the police force. And today he's a deputy superintendent, in fact. And I think at times I find that puzzling. Gosh, why hasn't someone like that left? But, you know, he's made it clear he's not a quitter. And as long as he lives in Boston, he'd rather be on the inside of the department than the outside.
Outside of Michael Cox, what do you hear from the Boston Police Department today about your bringing this very painful episode of years ago back to the forefront?
I have done some talks at bookstores and whatnot, and off-duty police officers have shown up, and they've talked about how a lot of people are reading this in the department. There's a lot of talk about it under the radar. Some of them have said, you know, this is the kind of thing that we should be talking about with these issues about truth-telling and the blue wall of silence and the mess that we can get in because of the corrosive aspects of this.
Dick Lehr is the author of The Fence, A Police Cover-Up Along Boston's Racial Divide. He's also a journalism professor at Boston University, a former Boston Globe investigative reporter. Dick Lehr, thanks very much for coming in.
Thank you, Bob.